newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy...
The media project is underway, a half hour of commentary and analysis, and some days some insight even into the news media issues of the week. Thank you for deciding that you're going to spend some time with us in this very important time for the American news media. I'm Rex Smith, editor-at-large of the Times Union, your host with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. How are you, Alan?
I'm just fine, Rex, and you know, we're all confined to our homes, but we're all together, and that's what's important.
That is great. Absolutely. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and professor. How are you, Rosemary?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Raring to go. And Barbara Lombardo, longtime editor of the Saratogian, executive editor of the Troy Record, and now also teaching journalism at UAlbany. Are you out and about, Barbara?
I am. Doing a lot of walking outside when the weather is nice. Otherwise, I'm in and about.
That's great. I'm napping and snacking.
I didn't say I wasn't snacking.
It's kind of an amazing thing. You know, just the logistics of making media happen in this environment. Alan, a lot of your programming now is being done by people working from home, isn't that right?
Yes, an awful lot of people are, but they're heroes. Rex, we have our board operators who are heroes. They come in every day, and they keep the place going. They make sure that they fumigate, but they're there. And we have our news division that comes in and does its work. Ian Pickus, the remarkable news director, and everybody else.
Yes. This is difficult work, you know, being the person kind of trying to coordinate it from inside with people running around outside. The Times Union newsroom is virtually empty. Well, it is literally empty most of the time with everything being done from the road. And I think that's just, and that's happening all over the place. Tragically, of course, hundreds of journalists are being laid off right when the public needs them most. In March, at least 100 people in local newsrooms lost their jobs, according to CNN Business. Actually, maybe 300, I believe it is, because of the financial climate. And Gannett, the largest newspaper chain in the United States with more than 500 newspapers, has put all of its staff members on 1 week a month furlough, meaning that they're basically cutting their pay by 25%, and all of the managers are having pay cut by 25%. Very tough time.
You know, I would rather cut off my arm, I'll be honest with you, than penalize the people who work here. So it is interesting to me that when public radio does its thing and protects its people, that we know what has to be done. Gannett couldn't wait, right, to buy all kinds of newspapers and to fill its hand, and yet when it comes to a little bit of discomfort, they don't wait. They just lay people off.
A lot of that has to do with the model for business ownership. And if you've got companies that are beholden to their shareholders, you're going to continue to see newspapers and other companies that are doing what's best for the top brass and their shareholders and not for the people they're supposed to serve and not for their employees.
Exactly.
The only difference seems to be that, and this may be a roundtable discussion more than media, is that other businesses get bailouts when they make poor business decisions and are in trouble. They have no rainy day fund. They can go to the government. I don't see much in this bailout bill for media.
Right. And you hear a lot now about the move to nonprofits for newspapers, and I'm still not really clear about how that works, where newspapers, if it's an increasingly used model, how newspapers can be deemed nonprofit.
Well, they would have to change their governance structure, and the shift to nonprofit status is rare. You know, the Salt Lake Tribune has just gone through it, the newspaper that was owned by the Huntsman family. And they have just gone nonprofit, but it's not the be-all and end-all, because a newspaper that is a nonprofit, the Tampa Bay Times, formerly the St. Petersburg Times, has just announced that they are dropping to 2 days a week of print only. They're 7 days a week digital, but they're getting rid of their print product 5 days a week. This is a powerful, terrific newspaper historically, right? Rosemary, you live down in that area.
Yes,
you
had
you were the managing editor of a competing paper. Or did you work for the Times?
Mm-hmm. No, I worked for the New York Times regional newspaper that competed with
it. Mm-hmm. But I remember at some point you were, you went to Orlando for a while, didn't you? You were a Floridian for several years. Amazing.
I was. It was the best place I ever lived. Glad not to be there now, though.
Yeah.
We're happy to have you up in New York State again.
Thank you very much. How much of the current problems that we're seeing, and you've just cited a bunch of it, is real, and how much of it was coming and the COVID is simply an excuse, a cover-up for it?
Or just the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, I think that I think that's the case, that, you know, these newsrooms that are in such trouble would have eventually gotten to this point, I think, but the absolute loss of the advertising revenue with all of the brick-and-mortar stores closed down, there's just no advertising revenue anymore. And so you can see why it is pushing a lot of these newspapers over the edge.
One of the things that concerns me when we talk about newspapers going to fewer or even no print days, I don't think that not having print is the ultimate problem. I think that when you still have to provide great news online 7 days a week, you can't do it if you're cutting staff because the print product has gone away, that you're cutting staff as if you're not really covering the news 7 days a week, which you still must do.
I have my ethics students now considering the ethical situation that many outlets are facing right now. They have opened up their paywall so that people who need vital information on what's happening with coronavirus and what they can do to protect themselves can actually read information about it. So they're giving away the store at a time when, as we've just pointed out, the money is more needed than ever. Is that ethical? Is that good business behavior? Is it good strategy?
It's a wonderful question, and I'll just explain that the Times Union plan is we are putting outside the paywall the important breaking daily news and the fundamental stuff people need to know, but the enterprise reporting, the people stories, the stuff that is developed by our own reporters remains behind the paywall. And of course, it costs $1 a week to subscribe digitally, so that shouldn't be too much of a burden on people. But even so, we have left outside the paywall and accessible, therefore, to everyone any information that governments are putting out or the crucial stuff that people need to see. But I think that's a great ethical question.
Have you found whether that's affected circulation at all? At least some papers are finding that they are actually getting an increase in subscribers, even though they have things outside the paywall or still inside the paywall.
We are seeing a moderate increase in digital subscriptions, yes. But that's, of course, that doesn't offset the huge revenue loss from the advertisers that are simply not there anymore.
If I can, I'd like to register for a remark here. I want to go back to the idea of making newspapers not-for-profit. Now, I've been running WAMC for quite a while now. I get a salary. But if I crap out, if I die, or if I retire, I don't get to own anything. And that's something, right, gang, that the publishers of newspapers might be loath to do, unless, of course, the whole enterprise would go under if they didn't do it.
I see what you're saying. You mean to convert for-profits into not-for-profit, you would give up your ownership. I guess the question would be, has the asset that you hold, that being the newspaper, has it so depreciated in value that you're really not losing much by turning it over into a not-for-profit? Or are you so mission-driven that you're going to give it up because you just believe the mission of journalism is so important you're willing to yield, right?
Nah, but altruistically, one has to really understand that you give up a good deal in terms of ownership if, in fact, things are going to go from being a for-profit to being a not-for-profit organization. But I think that's very difficult to do.
I believe that's
true.
I'd like
to point out at this time that nonprofits are not doing terrific at this time anyway. This crisis has affected donations and all their revenue streams, just like the for-profits are also endangered right now. No real protection against a catastrophe like this.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Rosemary, there is a $2 trillion package out there that is offering money to businesses, including not-for-profits, in order to stay afloat. And what's interesting about it is if a radio station, and most of them are, I believe, belongs to a university, they can't apply for that money. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm. They can or cannot?
They cannot. They cannot because the university is ineligible. So that a place like WAMC, which is a not-for-profit, all right, but is itself a company, they can apply, but not the radio stations which belong to universities.
Well, some would say that's part of the Trump administration's continuing hostility toward higher education and expertise in general. Some would say.
No, that's right.
It's quite astounding. And, you know, I think that we all have to think hard about this. Not-for-profits get certain advantages under federal tax law, you know, appropriately so. That's the notion. We are all, as taxpayers, subsidizing not-for-profits because we believe they have a public benefit, whether it's the Albany Symphony Orchestra or a museum or WAMC. There's a public benefit to having these entities out there. And I think it is appropriate for us to provide some of that support when necessary to keep these important public entities going.
Absolutely right.
But having said that, let's all agree that folks ought to chip in when the fund drive comes around for WAMC, right? Keep the media project on the air.
Absolutely.
No argument there.
By the way, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith with Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Barbara Lombardo. We need to talk a little bit about truth-telling in the era of Donald Trump because journalists are expected to point out untruth when it's there, I think. And of course, we are now finding a sort of revisionist history coming in the White House briefing room concerning the coronavirus response, in which the president is suggesting that he did everything correctly. Nobody could have anticipated this outbreak. His leadership is saving millions of lives. It is hard to write directly what the president says, of course. On the one hand, people say to journalists, just tell us the facts. Well, the fact is the president said that. But if the real challenge is to write the truth, what you need to put right next to that is, but that's not so, right?
It's not only a challenge, but it is a very serious obligation. And it frustrates the heck out of me when the mainstream media doesn't do that every single time.
The comedy shows may do it best, where they show clips of what he said today and what he said 2 weeks ago, and they're diametrically opposed, even though he said, oh, I never called it a hoax. And then you have a clip of him saying, it's all a hoax. They're out to get me. That's very effective. We don't do that enough. And the comedians are knocking the mainstream media for still, after almost 4 years, believing that there's a change every time you see a different Trump on stage. So this week we heard how he's much more somber than he used to be. He's taking it seriously. No, he really is. He's the same old Trump we've seen for 4 years.
And CNN is running a scroll underneath him. We can't do that on the radio. But CNN is running a scroll saying this is a lie or this isn't true, which is extraordinary and really is exactly what you guys are talking about.
The real problem is that Fox News and what is this One America Now network is just running the president uncommentated upon. And it makes him look very good, very strong.
Right. And you see that reflected in, if you have friends in social media who come from the president's camp, you can conclude that their principal news source is Fox News if they're posting, let's all get behind our leader, let's not take pot shots at the person who is our leader in this crisis. Right. You know what they're saying is no criticism of the great man. Right.
And while I'm at it, I got to tell you, we here at WAMC are getting some mail, some very tough pro-Trump mail, not a lot, but some. And in each case, what I've always done is to write them, send them my letter, my number, and say, why don't you call me up? We'll talk about this. And then write back to them. And guess what? There is no such person, period. So one wonders whether there's a certain amount of combined effort here.
You have to wonder.
Rex, the same job it always has, which is to print all the news and then try to make sense of it. There is this piece, but then there's also this piece, and there has to be discussion. And I think the media widely is doing that. I'm not sure that anybody's paying attention, or not enough people are paying attention.
Yeah, it's such a difficult situation. But we've been talking about this for 4 years now, because we hate to be in a situation of setting ourselves up as hostile to one particular political party or one political force, Donald Trump. But you appear to be hostile when your job is truth-telling, when one person consistently lies. Think of the production that's required by CNN. I mean, just if you think about the way that you have to produce television, CNN has to know, of course, that the president is going to lie. so that they can have someone poised there working what's basically the font that comes across the screen across the bottom. So somebody is poised there to point out and to write that scroll that says the president is not telling the truth. They're doing that because they know that he's going to lie.
I have a related question for you, fellow panelists, because I listened with great interest when the three of you last week discussed whether the media should be continuing the live briefings. And
right.
I wrote a blog post about that, and then I incorporated some of the things that you said. And in response on my blog, someone from Saratoga had, who I am confident is not a Trump supporter, wrote on the comments that the media should be required, used the word required, which I balked at, that the media is such a vital source of information to the public, information about coronavirus, people are hungry, and that the media should be required to make sure they're airing info and providing info through all their sources. And what do you guys think about that?
I'm the recipient of a couple of people who write to me on a regular basis and saying, get rid of Trump, I don't like him. I call them up and I talk to them and they laugh and they say, I was just frustrated or whatever, or they're not there. But I got to tell you, the behavior of the press corps as they sit there is very interesting to me. So, for example, I notice that more and more, they don't want to hear from Trump. They want to hear from the experts who were there. So they get Fauci, they get each of them up there, and they ask them the questions. And then Trump, because he is a bully, tends to get disgusted and push his way back in. So I think that there may be some unifying theme on the part of the people sitting there that we're going to ask the experts and not ask Trump for his BS.
Yeah, you know, and in the unifying theme, I would applaud CNN's Jeremy Diamond, who, when it was his turn to ask a question, he handed the microphone over to, is her name pronounced?
Alcindor.
Oh, Amish Alcindor.
Yeah, so that she could ask her second question. And I think there, even though we in the media are competing businesses in a lot of ways, right, in reality, we're competing, but we need to work together to tell the news. And I would like to see the press corps do more of that, of cooperating and asking the same question. If the question wasn't answered, and it's a question that ought to be answered, they need to band together and keep asking the question.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's so interesting to me how 15 years ago, the idea that one news outlet would be playing Fox or anybody else and taking excerpts from them, because the theory would have been, oh, we're going to help them. Not anymore. Now everybody plays everybody else's stuff. And I think that's terrific.
You know, I don't think, to get back to your blog writer, that there's any lack of awareness on the part of any media that they have a responsibility to fully report the dangers and the methods and what you can do, all of that related to the plague we're going through. The problem is, how do you do it accurately? So the requirement part, you were right to balk at that. I certainly don't want Donald Trump requiring the media a certain way to cover. What would he have them do? Don't listen to Andrew Cuomo's briefings, but come to mine every day. But how do you do it and put it all in perspective and to sort out the truth from the fiction? That's the part that we're all having trouble with, and trying to do it in an ethical, fair way. So I am the biggest Trump hater, and yet I feel strongly that we have got to show the president's news conferences every day.
Here's an interesting idea. You know, one suggestion put forward by a former NBC executive, Mark Lukasiewicz, he's a guy who used to be in charge of a lot of the live coverage of news half a generation ago. He said, you know, if the Oscars are on a 7-second delay, which is how they air so that expletives can be bleeped out and so on, why not put the White House briefing on a 30-minute delay so that the lies and inaccuracies and the political rants can be removed? He says if a 30-minute wait results in a 90% improvement in accuracy, surely that's a trade-off worth making. That's an interesting idea, isn't it?
I think it just opens us up to the criticism,
absolutely,
rightly or wrongly, that we are censoring the president. And I understand your distinction, Rex, between censorship, which is what the government does to block the First Amendment, and an editorial decision that a news outlet does. But for the public, they don't care.
And you don't think Fox would go along with that, do you? Not for a single minute. They'd be playing them real time while the other guys would play
catch
up.
Right. Yeah, that's right, of course.
It's definitely a dilemma.
In fact, one of the other suggestions is that you can't apply it all the way around. If you say that truth-telling has to be a prerequisite for appearing on live television, you can't do that when the major impediment to truth-telling is the president, because he's the he's the newsmaker. But producers make this decision all the time. If you're Chuck Todd, the host of Meet the Press on NBC, and you have as a guest a senator who doesn't tell the truth, who instead just attacks, I think you just don't invite him back. You take the repeat offenders out, but you can't really quite do that when the great recidivist in lying is the president of the United States.
Exactly right. You can keep Kellyanne and Jared off, but you cannot really cut out Donald Trump.
Yeah. I think that there's very good reporting being done, though, in saying that, for example, what President Trump says he has done about the ventilator shortage is probably untrue, but there is reporting being done about what is really going on. The difficulty in finding some of what's going on is because in or major healthcare organizations that are delivering a lot of the healthcare that is so problematic, there is now a crackdown on employees. The hospitals are telling their staff, you are not allowed to talk to the media, you're not allowed to use social media to express your point of view, because the staffs are just in a terrible situation, just not getting the equipment they need to be able to protect themselves as they're delivering health care. And yet, when you try to tell the truth of that, if you're a staff member at that place, you're being shut down by your employer. That makes our journalism more difficult, too.
And yet we do it all the time.
Right? And it increases reliance on social media and people willing to take that risk. Talk about the whistleblowers or the anonymous people who are in the trenches who see what's going on. It really makes it more important than ever for them to somehow be able to communicate with news reporters, even if we're not using their names in a story, to tell the story about what's really happening. It is a challenge.
We've always done that, right? In other words, the news media has always found sources who don't have to be identified, but who can come forward, whether it's in government or whether it's in hospitals. And we're seeing a good deal of that right now, of people who are not identified, nurses or other people or doctors, who some of them don't give a damn and do give their names, and some of them just protect themselves, and it's the news media's obligation to do that.
That's correct, but the challenge is so much greater now because our access is so much more limited. We can't stand outside the hospital and try to talk to people as they're coming out. We need to be distanced from people so that it makes it much harder to do what we normally would have been doing.
And how does it work for you, Rex, when you're doing it from your place? Obviously, you're looking for sources even though hospitals are closed, right?
Yes, I would say that it's difficult for our reporters, for everybody, to try to get information about what's going on. So far, because upstate has not seen the tremendous flood of cases, you know, we're still a couple of weeks away from that. We haven't seen the terrible toll that it has taken on the healthcare industry yet in our community. It's not that the healthcare professionals aren't exhausting themselves, working very hard, but they seem to, from everything we've been able to tell, they are not yet in the place of desperation that is going on in some of the hardest hit areas in the outer boroughs of New York City in particular. But I think the difficulty of covering will come. Yes.
Here's an ethical question. Your newspaper this morning had a very interesting article about the difference between Albany, which is relatively unscathed compared, relatively, I say, to New York City. So now there's a question as to whether cases are moved up to Albany. Albany people have to go down. The governor asked the people from upstate communities to come down and help with the crisis in New York City. We may have to send patients up, which is what I think your article was about this morning, Rex, to the Albany Medical College.
Well, we will be covering it all.
That's an ethical issue, but is it a media ethical issue? It's more like a balancing act that our doctors and hospital administrators have to take into consideration. Who is their duty to? What's your responsibility to others? And they're all wonderful, interesting humanitarian issues that should be covered by the press, but I don't know that they're directly media issues.
Okay, so we're going to have to call it there. That's the end of our time.
Oh, no.
Thanks to our guests, of course, the one and only Alan Shartok. Alan's not a guest, right? He's our host.
But he's an identical twin.
Yeah, maybe Lewis.
and to Barbara Lombardo, thanks so much to our tireless producer, David Gustina, and thanks to you for joining us on the Media Project.
But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is Editor-at-Large of the Times Union. Barbara Lombardo is a Journalism Professor at the University at Albany and former Executive Editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. And Rosemary Armeo is an Investigative Journalist and former Chair of the Department of Journalism at the University at Albany. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org, or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.